Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here with Chris Bessler. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. And we're also joined by Jack Freeman, staff writer for the Bonner County Daily Bee. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here for what is actually our last North Idaho News of the Week of 2025.
That's right. Yeah, we're taking next Friday off, so be warned. If you tuned in, you're going to get some autos, I presume.
Yeah, we're observing Boxing Day on the 26th, I guess. Right?
Isn't that Boxing Day, Jack?
I don't know. It's always on the calendar. A Canadian thing.
It's a British thing. An English thing, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about the news, because it's been a very busy week or couple weeks around here. Of course, the big story is the widespread flooding in the region, really throughout the entire Pacific Northwest, that has been making national news headlines. But here in Bonner County, as I think we mentioned last week, a state of emergency had been declared as of December 11th by Chair of the Bonner County Commission, Brian Domke. That was affirmed this week unanimously by the commission. And the same goes in Clark Fork, where the mayor had declared a state of emergency on the 11th of December. And the Clark Fork City Council met this week to affirm that emergency declaration. Mr. Freeman's reporting on this has been quite descriptive, I would say. You had some nice pieces, just to kind of explaining what residents are actually seeing out there. Because here in Sandpoint, it's been, I've been kind of surprised at how devastating it's been so close to us, where we're not really seeing the effects. You know, Sand Creek is a little fuller than usual, but it's not, you know, running over the roads or anything like that. But that's not the case elsewhere in the county. There were at one point or another 13,000 residents of the area without power in Bonner and Boundary counties due to those high winds that we received on December 16th and 17th earlier this week. And the forecast calls for basically somewhat more of the same, although it's going to be falling as snow instead of rain, hopefully. And that will be, will change, I guess, the weather pattern, moving ahead a little bit. More to talk about there. I'd like to, kind of talk to Jack, who's obviously done some interviews with, people directly affected by the flooding about that. But more headlines. Here's a brand new one hot off the press. The Idaho Conservation League and the Center for Biological Diversity have filed a suit against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Army Corps of Engineers over the approval by those entities of a proposed commercial marina and luxury housing development near the mouth of Trestle Creek on Lake Pendray. Trestle Creek is one of the Pacific Northwest's most important spawning streams for federally protected bull trout, and that is the cornerstone of the lawsuit against the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Army Corps of Engineers by the Conservation League and the Center for Biological Diversity. There is certainly more to say about that as well. I'll ask you, Chris, to, I think you brought that one to my attention. So if there's, we should talk about that one too, because that's going to have an impact on what's going on the lake going ahead. In the Lake Pendray School District, the board met for the last time this year on Tuesday to confirm the results of the November election, and Molly Williams replaces Tanya Sherman on the board. Tanya Sherman did not run for re-election in Zone 5, I believe, and so she's been replaced. Yes, Zone 5, she's been replaced by Molly Williams, who ran unopposed for that seat. And Lonnie Williams has been confirmed, I guess, as chair of the school board after the former board chair Geraldine Lewis resigned.
Oh, that was old. He's been serving as the board chair for a while.
Yeah, but he was.
He was confirmed to be reelected. He also ran unopposed.
Yeah. I see. Okay. So there was no change in the, I guess. Yeah. He had been serving in that seat before, and as chair, and there you go. Thank you, Jack. Big news in the city of Sandpoint. Couple of things coming down the pike, and we'll see probably in the new year, before city council, some recommendations from planning and zoning, and, as well as, discussion of what's going on down at City Beach at the spot for the proposed RV park, right near the railroad bridge there. Planning and zoning met and has recommended approval of the amended short-term rental ordinance, which lifts entirely the cap on the number of short-term rentals in the city. This rule change, again, it's been approved by planning and zoning for recommendation to city council. Now it has to go to city council for their adoption. But the planning and zoning, we've talked about what this entails before, but it has some changes to what's required for short-term rentals. But probably the most controversial aspect of this is that short-term rentals, even though are owned by people who do not live in the property itself, so the kind of short-term rentals that can be owned by anyone anywhere, not necessarily local residents, are that cap is recommended to be completely removed. The Planning and Zoning Commission is and Planning and Development Director Jason Welker have been at pains to point out that this is in effort to avoid a potential lawsuit that has been discussed as a possibility. Sandpoint is perhaps in the crosshairs of a lawsuit that would kind of remove the STR regulations entirely. So this modification is hoping to head that off at the pass. Also, the RV park. As I said, there was a meeting on what day was that?
Saturday.
On Saturday.
Saturday morning.
At the Russell Center, and it was a pretty good turnout at the Russell Center, talking about the future of the City Beach RV park, and what is going to happen there. There was a public meeting, and how many proposals was it? 3-4 proposals of, you know, what might happen, and public comment taken there for what will be happening at the 2-acre RV park site at Sandpoint City Beach. Plenty to talk about just there with what I've said so far. Where do we want to begin, and what have I missed?
Well, let's follow up on the workshop on the RV park real quick, since you had that most recently. And actually, it wasn't just a single or a set of proposals. It was like, bring your ideas, sort of workshop. And the city was looking to hear from citizens about any ideas that may or may not have been on the table. But some of the ideas that have been sketched out are to just continue this RV park. And they have a $950,000 grant to do that. Jack, other ideas that came out were aired at that? One is to make it more of an event space.
Yeah, I think that was the other prevailing idea. I think there were a couple other ideas for using the space as recreation or things like that. But I think the two overwhelming majority that I heard just kind of roaming around was we should keep this RV park, or we should turn it into an event space with More public amenities.
Yeah, kind of like more of a public, I mean, a multiple use.
Yeah.
It could be event space, could be parking part of the time. They could have food trucks there. They do, it seems like in all the ideas, they want to put kind of a little gazebo down near the water and have another bathroom there available, whether it would be a RV park. If it's an RV park, I presume they're going to want to make a bathroom that actually has showers in it for the RV park users. But if it's not an RV park, they having another public restroom at the beach would certainly be helpful. And they have an idea for a small craft launching area. So people with paddle craft could launch there instead of at the big boat launch where it gets pretty confusing.
Yeah. Is the boat launch idea, was that, is that pretty much off the table at this point?
Yep.
I
would believe so. I believe the number is in the millions for just the dredging alone to make that boat launch move there.
Yeah.
And I think the sentiment that I've gotten from talking with staff is, you know, that would be nice. And that's kind of what the public has said that they wanted, but there's no money.
Yeah.
And they've got to do what they can do, right? They can't just sit around and wait for $10 million to fall out of the sky to start a project.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So what next? It goes to city council, I guess, in some form.
Actually, it goes to the Parks Commission.
Oh.
And they're going to have a public meeting on January 14th for that. I think it's 2:30 p.m. at the City Hall.
Yeah, 2:30 p.m. at City Hall. And that's where they'll make their discussions and talk about it. And then hopefully out of that meeting will come kind of one to maybe three recommendations that Jason will bring to City Council, probably at their first meeting in February is what he said. That's the more realistic time frame that we'll hear about this again.
Okay.
And folks from Averill Hospitality were there and spoke a bit, kind of mainly hostile crowd, I'd say. They had kind of critical questions lobbed their way, and a couple of critical comments, but they were there to say basically that Brian Averill said that, you know, he thinks it's the community's decision, that they're willing to put in money that would make up loss of revenue from making it an RV park. I believe he committed to that.
Yes, yeah. He said that they are willing to do that. But when I talked to him, he really says that they don't have any idea of what that would look like quite yet. They said in their October 16th letter that they sent to the city, they would do 110% of the projected revenue from a renovated RV park. But they haven't. From what I understand, there's been no formal offer placed on the table to what that would actually look like.
Yeah. Averill Hospitality, of course, owns the adjacent hotel there at City Beach, the former Best Western Edgewater. The planning and zoning recommendation, this did not come down. I misread it. The recommendation did come down unanimously to remove the short-term rentals. My notes are a little confused here. But that to lift that cap altogether, that was unanimous by the Planning and Zoning Commission. Surprising to you at all, Zach? Or Jack?
It happens. No, I don't think so. I think this was more or less the expected outcome. The more this was discussed for an hour and a half, and a lot of that was commissioners kind of just throwing out ideas. Hey, have we tried this? Have we thought about this? Is there any way that we can keep some sort of cap in place? And the real answer from the city's legal was no, not really. Even if they, I think the quote was, if you increase it to 500 people, the 501st person is prohibited, and a regulation cannot amount to a prohibition. And so, like, any prohibition on that are illegal because of the Supreme Court, the Lava Hot Springs ruling. And the commission, I think the vibe that I got and from talking with a couple of them after was, it was a very uncomfortable decision to make. I don't know if any of them were necessarily like, you know, man, we really want to move this forward. But I think Reid Weber said it best, where he didn't feel it was in his, wherewithal, I guess, as a planning and zoning commissioner to say the city of Sandpoint should go to war with the state of Idaho over this and potentially open up a legal challenge. I think they feel that that's a city council decision if they want to do that. So this will obviously be further discussed, but a very, very awkward meeting. They waited for a full minute in silence, waiting for somebody to make a motion. So it's not like they were jumping at the opportunity, like a unanimous vote might suggest.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they were ready to strike this down or hold it any longer than they already had.
Was there anybody from the hospitality industry that, you know, runs Airbnbs in town there to speak on this?
Not at the Tuesday meeting. There was one person who spoke at when this was first discussed, saying that she was prohibited from running a STR in ADU because she moved out of her home. So she kind of spoke in favor of that, and I think they've received a little bit of testimony about that. There was a gentleman there who said he would have liked to have run an STR out of a home that he owned previously, but no giant, owner of STRs was there in favor of eliminating this cap.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So most of the, really, it's all kind of centered around anticipation that they're going to have trouble with this state.
A lawsuit, yes. Yeah. I would say that they have been told by their legal counsel, and just looking that having this on their books, and I think that they've been told, at least from what I've also heard, is that people were mounting a lawsuit against them because of that cap. And so they're doing this in an attempt to avoid that and also trying to strengthen their regulations a little bit from what they can do. But yeah, I think that that Lava Hot Springs ruling has really thrown a wrench into the STR code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, the downside of taking a cap off of short-term rentals, the number that can be in town, is that a lot of rentals that are used for the workforce could end up going to short-term rentals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was the intent behind placing the cap on there at the first.
Yeah, some of the they did recommend changing the not just removing the cap. There are other aspects of the change to the short-term rental ordinance. I know that they require somebody like a local representative to live within 10 miles of the location, things like that. So there are, it does strengthen to some extent the city's regulations while also removing this cap, and that'll go to city council for their consideration. Do you have any kind of feeling on how city council is going to move on this? What do they, usually do when something comes down to them unanimously from planning and zoning?
I think this one is really unique. I don't think it's like, it isn't even really a planning and zoning change. It's a code change that I think staff wanted the public to be aware of and get public input on. So I think this is unique. I think also the fact that it's going to be brought before the new council with two new council members, I believe makes this one a little bit more unpredictable. I don't know if we're exactly knowing what we're going to see. I believe Josh Torres was there at the first planning and zoning meeting when this was discussed to speak out against it. So I can expect him to speak out against it, but I also don't know exactly what the city council can do. It seems that the city's hands are fairly tied in this one. I wouldn't expect a unanimous vote, maybe not on the first meeting, but it's definitely going to be an interesting process, and I don't think anyone could predict how this is going to go.
Yeah. The Planning and Zoning Commission didn't stop there. They had more business to attend to, and they did vote this time, not unanimously, 4-1, and in part impacted by that change to the STR ordinance. They voted 4-1 to change the city's lot coverage size and density code at their Tuesday meeting. Hold on. There's percentages here. I want to make sure I get this right. The under the amended code, single-story buildings in the residential single-family zone can exceed what is currently a 35% building footprint limit. The code would eliminate the 40% building footprint cap in the residential multifamily zone, but retain the 70% impervious surface maximum. So the meaning that at least 30% of the surface of the lot has to be, I guess, pervious has to be, you know, grass, or so you can't pave the lot entirely. You can't put a building that covers the whole lot. There has to be.
Yes.
Yeah. The goal here is allowing property owners to have more flexibility with their land and add additional dwelling units. But the dissenting vote from Grant Simmons, he said that he was concerned about the consequences of expanding the housing supply at the same time that they're, recommending the, eliminating the cap on STRs, that, you know, you could have a sudden flood of, I guess, people, you know, coming to town and just investing in creating a bunch of short-term rentals. That would be the concern.
Yeah, that was, mm-hmm. And he was very concerned about the STR mm-hmm. changes as well.
Yeah.
Just moving forward with them on the same day, I think, made him a little uneasy. He talked mm-hmm. a lot about in both hearings, I guess, unintended consequences where, you know, the city is attempting to build more workforce housing. But I think it just made him a little uneasy that the ability to build more ADUs and then, which are supposed to be workforce housing or, you know, housing that people can own, that then become short-term rentals and come off the market. Mm-hmm. So I think he reflected his, you know, kind of worry in both hearings in that vote. He did a lot of questioning staff on, you know, is there anything that we can do in these situations, especially during the SDR code, to ensure that there's not unintended consequences. But I think the feeling at the end of the day was there's going to be unintended consequences for every decision that's mm-hmm. made. And they just kind of have to adapt to how the market chooses to move forward.
Hmm. Well, okay. Lots going on at the Planning and Zoning Commission. And then that also, I guess, goes to City Council for their consideration. And do you know, are they going to, I guess we probably don't know in what order they're going to decide to tackle these things, or if they're going to do it all at once or what?
No, yeah. Not yet. Yep. No.
Okay. I would like to talk a little bit about the flooding, because you obviously put some serious, did some real, what is it called? Shoe leather reporting on on the flooding that's been going on around here. It looks like you've been talking to people out in Hope and Clark Fork about what's going on. What is it like on the ground out there in the western part of the county or the eastern part of the county you know, the outlying areas, I guess, those areas affected by flooding?
Yeah, so I went out there just about a week ago, right after the initial flooding had kind of subsided. And it was very quiet in town. Mm-hmm. There was, you wouldn't exactly know that a huge flood had hit. There were mm-hmm. people still going to work and doing their jobs. I mean, that was how I found people, is I went into the Monarch Market and I went into a couple gas stations and just kind of went up to people and said, what could you tell me? Eventually found someone who had been affected by the flooding and was just leaving. Actually, I called them as they were leaving their house for the first time.
Mm. Was that somebody up Spring Creek Road?
Yes, yep. They had been stuck on.
Because a portion of that road was washed out, right?
Yes, they had been stuck on East Spring Creek. And so they kind of talked to me a little bit about what that experience was like, being basically trapped for a day in their house. So it was very, very intriguing. For what she said, it was mm-hmm. a little heartbreaking to hear just how powerful this flooding was. I mean, it washed away a road, obviously, but she said it sounded like a train coming through almost through her backyard, just flowing very, very quickly like that. But the residents of Clark Fork are still, you know, persisting. They're still going to work and trying to live as normal lives the best they can. The flooding washed away one of their main water lines. And so the that was discussed, I believe, at the meeting on Wednesday. I wasn't there. Carolyn was my boss, was there, and they said it's going to be a pretty substantial chunk of change to fix that. I believe they said up to $350,000 to repair that and get them back to where they were. But I believe the county and a lot of community organizations have stepped up to try and fill that void to do what they can for Clark Fork.
So they do have water. It's just not the supply is, I guess, limited, or it's they usually have more clean water supply than they do right now. One of the lines has been cut. One of two.
Yes, I believe so. And they were under a boil water notice for a couple of days there. I don't know if that's still standing. I'd have to check that. But yeah, there was concern, especially when I was talking to people at gas stations and markets, that you know, that the city could fix that or at least get a potable water tank, which they did end up getting, because they were like, we're going to run out of water. You know, people are coming in and buying water to cook and to drink. And so the city has been on top of that and doing all they can. But yeah, it's going to be a while before they're back up to 100%.
Yeah, the city had put a tank out in a parking lot out there for people to come and get potable water. Let's see. I'm going to open up the weather report here real quick before we go, just to see what else is, you know, what Mother Nature's going to throw at us here.
What's in store for us here?
Yeah.
They had several inches of snow up at Schweitzer yesterday.
Good news.
Yeah. So that was something badly needed up there.
Yeah. Let's see here. I guess I should be looking at not just Sandpoint, but looking at Clark Fork for the weather, for their weather report. Clark Fork is definitely getting precipitation, but it looks like it's calling for snow. Snow today, snow tonight, a 100% chance of snow in Clark Fork tomorrow, and a snow and then possible rain as we head into next week, which I guess could exacerbate this situation. Would you know, Jack, if this is, have they kind of got it under control now and know what to do, or is this something that could happen again if the rain keeps up?
I don't know if we're going to see flooding to the effect of what we saw last Thursday again, but I do think, you know, going in and fixing it. I mean, Spring Creek was flowing like a river. I mean, it was so fast when I was out there. And the more water that they have and more snow doesn't, you know, stick to the ground and just ends up going back in there, that's going to be worse for them and keep them from fully solving those problems, because they need to, you know, make sure that the roadways are fine. And it's really hard to do that when there's basically a river running right next to you. So I don't think any historical flooding like we saw, but I'll never say never with Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we have it.
And we're at our time.
Yep. We will we'll reconvene in the new year, I guess. This is our last one for the year. Jack, I hope you can join us for a little we'll probably do a year in review show on January 2nd.
Talk about the biggest stories of the year, maybe take a little look ahead to what we think might be the big stories in 26.
Mm-hmm. Yes, put on your prognostication hat.
We might go a little longer than a half hour for that
show. I think so. Yeah, we usually do that one. That turns into an hour-long show, I think. So we'll be back the day after New Year's Day to take a look ahead at 2026 and look back at 2025.
It'll be next Thursday or Friday? You're talking about?
Where are we here? So we're here, yeah. the 19th of December. Next week, we'll take off the 26th.
Yeah. It'll be the actually January 2nd.
Yeah, there we go. January 2nd of 2026.
Yeah.
Wow. Here we go. Okay. Well, with that, thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Thanks for listening to Panhandle Community Radio. We've got some holiday programming in our schedule. I'll talk a little bit about that during Otto's Eclectic Mix in the next half hour. But right now we can say good morning to Jack Freeman. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
And thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you too, Jack.
have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, I guess.
Everybody.
Yes. Yeah.